Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, April 9, 2022. Viewpoints. Aviation programs end. Sad for community. Stuart Doreen, staff columnist. College's decision leaves questions in light of industry's heightened activity in Midland. The Midland College Aviation Maintenance Program will be shutting down. And according to Midland College President Steve Thomas, there is no saving it. There's no amount of money that can convince the Midland College Board to throw it a lifeline. It is a done deal. We have already undergone procedures to sunset the program, which means we have notified FAA and the program accrediting agencies, Thomas said in a statement. We also notified the advisory committee, faculty, and students over a year ago that the program was closing. Faculty are retiring, and we are not recruiting new students. We are planning other uses for the facility. Thomas was not at a meeting of concerned residents and others about what could be done, if anything, to change the fortunes of the program. There was a board member there for a little bit, but that person left around halfway through. In retrospect, he had to know what Thomas clearly stated. Any attempt to bring the program back with money from a development corporation, energy industry group, or philanthropy is dead on arrival. The purpose isn't to throw shade on Midland College. The school's leaders made a decision to close down an aviation maintenance program at Midland International because it was in the best interest of the school. There apparently wasn't enough interest. It was the second elimination of an aviation-related program as the college previous closed the pilots program. The point of the column is to go back to what was written in this space last week. Who are we as a community? For years, I drove by Midland Air Park and out to Midland International Airport with the notion that this was an aviation community. You know, an aviation community built on the back of John Pliska, one that was home to a bombardier program that eventually became Midland International, one where the acronym MAF still has meaning, and one that is so attached to private aviation that it has designed the northern part of the city around an executive airport. For what it is worth, studies of our community have indicated Midland International Airport is the crown jewel of any economic development efforts, and millions have been spent to make a spaceport happen. I thought, based on what I thought the city is, that aviation and aerospace would complement each other as the space industry has made Midland home. Sure, we don't have Jeff Bezos blasting rockets from our city, but there has been success for those who are paying attention. One of those companies that proudly calls Midland home was also present at the meeting at the airport and stated that it expects to see its planes back in Midland by the end of the year, and that its spaceport growth will include up to 3 new buildings, and that one of those buildings will be a maintenance building. The hiring of 20 new employees is expected, including trained aviation mechanics, like those that came out of the Midland College program. After the meeting, officials even provided a pitch for high school students in Midland, Odessa, who think that aviation and aerospace might be for them, and who would be interested in salaries up to $120,000 just to start for maintaining aircraft. That is one heck of a marketing pitch. It is a stepping stone to get into space, one aerospace official said. That is the way we see it. We're hopefully going to be building airframes for hypersonic vehicles in the next 5 years out here in Midland. I mean, it's going to be super cool. If we get the wind tunnel out here, you're going to have every big aircraft and space manufacturer on the planet right here in Midland within 3 to 5 years. They talked about the promise for trained maintenance officials to be part of the industry that will make it possible for people to go anywhere on the planet in 90 minutes. They talked about the constant turnover and the retirements of mechanics during the COVID pandemic. Again, with such aerospace activity on the horizon at the spaceport and with the aircraft activity already in place, it makes one wonder how the maintenance program wasn't succeeding. It was said at the meeting that a similar program near Abilene was filled up. What happened? Was this community's left hand guilty of not knowing what the right hand was doing, or at least needing? What was holding back this program in Midland? It's probably too late to ask for the sake of the Midland College Aviation Program, but maybe the answer could still be beneficial. As one airport official said this week, the private sector stepped in and made up for the college's decision to scrap the pilot program. Maybe that will happen again with the maintenance program. What we know now is there is no use in calling State Representative Tom Craddock or the Permian Strategic Program or the governor for a reprieve and $500,000 a year to keep the program funded. The Midland College Aviation Program is dead and not coming back. Chambers advocate in D.C. Members encourage West Texas representation during trip. By Kate Williamson, Midland Chamber and UTPB. Last week, the Midland and Odessa Chambers hosted their first ever joint D.C. fly-in. The goals were to educate, advocate, and tell the story of the charms and challenges of our region. Those challenges include supporting one of the most important economies of the world while protecting our infrastructure, providing for public education, and supporting a balanced approach to immigration. We arrived at a time when Capitol Hill wasn't really back to business as usual. D.C. is a city still reeling from the COVID-19 pandemic, the January 6th insurrection, and a war being waged in Ukraine. It was no small task, and together we were up for the challenge. Once the initial idea for the fly-in was approved, the staffs of the Midland and Odessa Chambers got to work planning. Beyond chamber support, the program needed help from the business community and found it with support from Diamondback, Chevron, Pioneer, and the Sewell family of companies. 60 leaders from Midland and Odessa, including 6 UT Permian Basin students, learned about the process and heard from policy experts along with national media professionals. Even though most of the attendees are engaged citizens and leaders in their fields, they still benefited tremendously from behind-the-scenes look at how Congress works. Former Ambassador to Mexico, Christopher Landau, gave us insights on the complex issues around immigration. A media panel that included a former White House press secretary and current broadcast journalist who covers The Hill shared details about how news decisions get made and encouraged us to support local media. It's something I agree with as a daily reader of the Reporter Telegram. The Washington Post will always cover what happens in D.C., but without local news, we wouldn't always know what happens at city council or school board meetings. And, of course, we heard directly from our elected officials, Congressman August Pfluger, U.S. Senator John Cornyn, and U.S. Senator Ted Cruz. We were reminded by Mark Strand of the Congressional Institute that those who work on the Hill, including many elected officials, are often generalists. Most of them, certainly those from states other than Texas, cannot explain the difference between fresh and produced water, between tubing and casing, or understand the unique challenges that come with an economy rooted in energy production. It is up to us to tell the story of our community and industry needs while retaining the humanity of who we are and what we do. What do we do now? Continued coordinated efforts will produce the most success for this region. Each chamber has an advocacy committee that can take the lead in establishing a joint agenda. Chamber leaders and members can prioritize this agenda in their work. That is just the beginning. We often have high-level politicians swing through our Permian fundraising ATM. I get it. I spent the last decade of my career as a fundraiser. And we can all do better. Can we ask the next politician who is helping to bolster their campaign account to stay overnight in the area that's helping to fund their reelection? Can we organize more than a picture opportunity or press conference in front of a rig, but an actual meaningful visit to learn, to witness the opportunities and challenges we have at Midland ISD and Ector County ISD, to see the incredible Grow Your Own progress at the University of Texas Permian Basin College of Engineering, to tour the Midland International Air and Spaceport, and have Sarah Harris showcase the economic footprint, to witness the collaboration ignited by the Permian Strategic Partnership. We need our federal leaders to see, hear, and understand both the rich innovation and the continual struggle of life in the oil patch. The Midland and Odessa Chambers have long been the conveners of this work and will continue to present the communities with ways to engage and advocate. Many chambers visit D.C. every year. In fact, San Antonio was there when we were. They had 100 delegates. It is a win that we had 60 in our first year, and it's proof of a combined West Texas community that wants to be better engaged. We are better together. I am hopeful that this trip will produce a more robust and coordinated effort for us to help our elected officials and their colleagues to move beyond quick sound bites and to govern in a way that recognizes and elevates all we do in West Texas. We need your help telling that story together. Individual citizen engagement is important. A phone call or email can make a big difference. Visiting with your representatives is not a burden or imposition, but a right and privilege. Both chambers will continue to be the conduit to this important work at the state and federal levels. Kate Williamson is the chair, Midland Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors, and the executive director, Shepherd Leadership Institute, UTPB. Here's a few fast facts about the DC fly-in. The Midland Chamber of Commerce and Odessa Chamber of Commerce organized the DC fly-in. In all, about 60 West Texans and local leaders attended the DC fly-in. Here are some quick highlights from the DC fly-in itinerary. Capitol Hill 101 and briefings from U.S. Chamber experts. Speaker, Christopher Landau, former ambassador to Mexico. Speaker, U.S. Senators John Cornyn and Ted Cruz. Bipartisanship panel discussion, including West Texas Congressman August Pfluger and Jody Arrington, along with others. Media panel discussion, moderated by Tatum Hubbard, UT Permian Basin Chief of Staff and Executive Director of Communications. Commercial space industry discussion. Texas Producers Won't Be Riding to the Rescue, by Mitchell Schnurman. Dallas Morning News. The hydraulic fracturing revolution revived the energy industry in Texas and the U.S., ushering in years of cheap oil and gas. But don't count on producers riding to the rescue this time. Despite oil prices topping $100 a barrel, most shale oil and gas producers are unwilling to ramp up production in a big way. The primary reason? Investors are pushing to hold back spending and stick with slow growth plans. They fear being drawn into another boom-bust cycle that wipes out billions of dollars in capital. So instead, oil companies are rewarding their backers with big dividends, stock buybacks, and soaring stock prices. In the past, investors put a lot of money into the oil patch and lost a lot, said Lutz Killian, senior economic policy advisor at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Now, finally, the industry is generating profits, and they feel that this is the time for them to be compensated for the risk they took, Killian said during a recent virtual town hall. They're very much opposed to large-scale production increases because who knows what the price might do in a couple of years. Oil companies, he added, cannot afford to go against the wishes of their investors. Many economic measures, such as the number of non-farm jobs in Texas, have recovered to their pre-pandemic levels, but not domestic oil production. In January, the U.S. produced 11.37 million barrels of crude a day, down from 12.83 million barrels in February 2020, a shortfall of almost 11.4%, according to data from the U.S. Energy Information Administration. The gap in Texas production is slightly smaller, just under 10%. On Thursday, the White House announced the largest release of oil reserves in history, 1 million additional barrels per day on average, every day for the next 6 months. The supply is intended to serve as a bridge until domestic production ramps up by the end of the year. The White House said domestic production is expected to increase by 1 million barrels per day in 2022. Still, too many companies aren't doing their part and are choosing to make extraordinary profits and without making additional investment to help with supply, the White House wrote. The Dallas Fed Energy Survey, which polls energy firms in Texas, southern New Mexico, and northern Louisiana, recently asked executives why they were restraining growth amid high oil prices. The most popular answer was investor pressure to maintain capital discipline, cited by 59% of 132 respondents. Producers also face labor shortages and more competition for workers. In February, Texas added 5,100 oil and gas jobs, a 2.9% gain for the month, according to federal data. But the sector was still 38,700 jobs shy of the total in February 2020, before the pandemic hit. Supply chain bottlenecks limit access to key materials, especially steel pipe for drilling, said Bruce Bullock, director of the McGuire Energy Institute at Southern Methodist University. But the darkest cloud on the horizon is that it's very difficult for companies to raise capital right now, either through debt or share offerings through Wall Street, Bullock said. That window is still not open. Memories of bad investments and defaults remain fresh. From 2010 to 2020, the U.S. shale industry had negative free cash flows of $300 billion, impairments of over $450 billion, and over 190 bankruptcies, according to a 2020 report by Deloitte. The money-losing record prompted the big push toward capital discipline, which resulted in producers sharing more cash with investors and spending less on drilling. They're saying, "We're not going to invest until you show us this discipline," Bullock said. Irving-based Pioneer Natural Resources, a leading player in the Permian, said it's returning roughly 80% of free cash flow to shareholders through dividends and stock buybacks. At the same time, it's pledged to grow production no more than 5% a year. In a February earnings call, an analyst asked whether that growth limit applied to 2022. "There's no change for us. Long term, we're still in that 0% to 5% range," CEO Scott Sheffield said. "At $100 oil, $150 oil, we're not going to change our growth rate. We think it's important to return cash back to the shareholders." Sheffield worried about private independent operators increasing production too rapidly, and depleting the inventory of the shale fields, and there's no guarantee that demand will stay strong for long. We may need the extra barrels today. The question is, will we need them in 23 and 24? Sheffield said. In the early days of the pandemic, the price of oil fell below zero to a negative $37 a barrel as global energy supplies vastly outstripped diminishing demand. Oil prices gradually recovered as economies regained their footing, and prices soared after Russia invaded Ukraine. In early March, West Texas Intermediate crude topped $123 a barrel. Prices have generally remained above the $100 threshold, and Texas drivers are paying about $3.82 for a gallon of regular gasoline, 50% more than a year ago. There's a big fear premium that keeps pulsing in and out of the oil market, said Jim Crane, a fellow in energy studies at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. It's not a fun time to be driving an SUV or a pickup. In past supply shocks, such as after Iraq's invasion of Kuwait in 1990, world leaders turned to Saudi Arabia to boost production. But Saudi and other OPEC members have made only modest increases so far, signaling they want to avoid being drawn into the Russian conflict. Oil prices fell 7% Thursday after the White House announced plans to tap oil reserves for the next 6 months, but it's not clear how that will affect prices at the pump. There's no guarantee you're going to have $2 a gallon gasoline for the life of your pickup, Crane said.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, April 10th. This section is called Other Voices. This column is entitled Texas Constitutional Amendments Explained by State Representative Brooks Landgraf. Landgraf serves House District 81, which encompasses Andrews, Ector, Ward, and Winkler counties. Property tax relief is up for a vote. Be sure you cast a ballot. On May 7th, two proposed amendments to the Texas Constitution will be on the ballot for a statewide vote. For these amendments to pass, they must be approved by a majority of Texas voters. I am extending a friendly invitation for you to vote and have your voice be heard in this important election. I want to provide explanations of both propositions so that you can confidently make an informed vote on each one. Proposition 1 would amend the state constitution to authorize the state legislature to reduce the property tax limit for school maintenance and operations taxes imposed on the homesteads of elderly or disabled residents. This would effectively allow the tax ceiling for Texas homeowners who are disabled or at least 65 years old to be compressed. In other words, Proposition 1 allows the school property taxes of senior citizens and the disabled to be frozen or lowered. Proposition 2 would increase the homestead exemption for school district property taxes from $25,000 to $40,000. By increasing the homestead exemption by $15,000 per year, the average homeowner will pay $175 less in school property taxes. In other words, Proposition 2 increases the resident's homestead exemption so that the first $40,000 of your home's value isn't taxed by the school district. If passed, both of these propositions will provide property tax relief to Texans across the state, especially Texas seniors. I will be voting for Proposition 1 and for Proposition 2. I hope this helps explain these important issues that will be on your ballot. Early voting runs from Monday, April 25th to Friday, April 29th, and Monday, May 2nd to Tuesday, May 3rd. Election day is Saturday, May 7th. Go out and vote, and let West Texans' voices be heard across our state. God bless Texas.
Benadryl and sleep hygiene. Dear Dr. Roach, I have taken one Benadryl at bedtime for the past 2+ years. I sleep 7 hours and feel rested the next day. Most nights, I need to get up during the night to use the bathroom and rarely have trouble going back to sleep. Recently, I have heard that the active ingredient in this medicine has a destructive effect on memory, especially for the elderly. I am 83 years old and concerned about memory loss, although I haven't displayed symptoms of said loss. When I asked my internist about this, he indicated no problems with my continued usage of one Benadryl at bedtime. What are your thoughts? LS. Answer: the risk of memory loss due to Benadryl appears to be small. I do not recommend Benadryl for regular use because for many people it worsens the quality of sleep and they do not feel well rested. Further, there is evidence that regular use of Benadryl increases risk of motor vehicle accidents for seniors who drive. Even though you are doing well and feel rested, I still recommend sleep hygiene techniques as a first-line treatment.
Difference in opinion ends long-time friendships. Dear Abby for Tuesday. Dear Abby, the pandemic has put a strain on relationships. Last year, I lost my best friend of 40 years over the COVID vaccines. I believe the vaccine helps to keep me safe, as well as helps my family and friends. This friend decided he and his family would not take the jab. He quit his job rather than get vaccinated. This caused a rift so wide that in his eyes, he and his family could not continue being friends with our family. I am sad about it. The big problem my wife and I are contending with concerns our 8-year-old daughter. She has been best friends with my former best friend's daughter since birth. There have been 8 years of sleepovers, birthdays, park visits, get-togethers, and everything in between. We haven't seen them in 6 months. We can't keep telling our daughter the pandemic is the reason she can't see her best friend. This situation is so simple and so complicated. What do I tell my daughter about her best friend? Victim of the times. Dear victim, tell your daughter the truth, that her friend's parents will no longer allow it. Then explain why. That way she won't think that this is in any way her fault. Dear Abby, I was recently contacted by my graduating class to help organize a reunion. Since then, one of the organizers has decided that our committee is an inseparable trio who must get together regularly by Zoom and occasionally in person. We were not in touch before the reunion and we have little in common, but I can tell she's lonely, so I've indulged her so far. However, she now wants to convene periodically for long weekends at a nearby inn. I do not want to leave my spouse for long weekends or spend money and time on a person whom I don't care to befriend. When I've tried to demur with unavailability excuses, she insists that we are a trio and we simply will wait a few weeks until I can find an open date. I don't want to be rude, but I can't figure out how to politely tell her that I have no interest in accepting her suggestions for an extended slumber party. How should I handle this? Reluctant alumna in the West. Dear alumna, handle it by being frank with this needy individual. Tell her, this isn't going to happen. I do not wish to leave my husband for a weekend. I don't mind helping with a reunion, but your demands on my time have increased to the point where they are too much for me. Dear Abby, the season of pleasant weather and outdoor concerts is approaching. Invariably, we end up sitting by the chatterboxes. These folks seem oblivious to anyone else, including the performers, and the rest of us who want to enjoy the performance. I realize these are free concerts, but I don't want to have to listen to these rude people. Any suggestions for silencing them so we can hear what the rest of us came for? Disgusted in South Carolina. Dear Disgusted, keep your tone civil. You might ask, would you please talk more quietly? We are trying to enjoy the performance. However, if they aren't receptive to your suggestion, consider moving as far away from them as possible.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.